streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top.
Whoa.
And here comes a mitchell. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen,
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The UFC returns to pay-per-view on Saturday night for UFC 212 from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And myself and Daniel Galvan are going to preview this fight card here on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. We're going to talk about our top five fights for the card, some of the under-the-radar fights, also talk a couple topics about this fight card, including which underdogs do we think have the best chance to win. Now, before I bring in Daniel, I'll let you know about my sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is your gateway to everything fighting, MMA, boxing, wrestling, and more, live on your phone or TV. Live stream free and premium MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. UFC 212 going to be headlined by a featherweight title unification matchup, Jose Aldo versus Max Holloway. Daniel, this is a division that I guess there's been this cloud over this division for the last year and a half or so. But is it true UFC featherweight champion going to be crowned on Saturday night? Or is that Conor McGregor cloud still hanging over this division?
Man, as big as clouds are, if it doesn't rain, I'm pretty sure they disappear. And if Conor's not going to fight in the UFC, I feel pretty content about what we have in this main event, Jason. I really do. After his loss to McGregor, Jose Aldo looked like he returned to form in his fight against Frankie Edgar. Watching that fight, it was kind of like he was fighting at his own rhythm, and Edgar was just reacting to everything Aldo was doing. And for Aldo to do that against Edgar, I think validates what we've always thought, that he's literally the best featherweight of all time. And for Max Holloway, winning 10 fights in a row, kind of impressive, Jason. So obviously Conor has, you know, he has the knockout over Aldo. And the second he wants to come back to featherweight, he should get the championship fight. But I'm looking forward to UFC 212 because I do think this is the type of fight to kind of restore the order at 145 pounds.
I like the way you put that, restore the order. And of course, you know, one of the crazy things about Max Holloway, this is a guy who made his UFC debut February 4th, 2012, and he's only 25 years old.
It's astonishing. It really is. And I remember the early portion of his career where the talk was, this kid is so dang young. He has immense upside. But we always have these conversations, I think, with these 20-year-old, 21-year-old, 22-year-old fighters. We always talk about their upside, and usually they never get there. Like, we forget about them, and there's a new young prodigy. But Holloway is one of those fighters that's kind of lived up to it. And there's something to be said about maintaining that consistency because, man, mixed martial arts has to be one of the toughest sports, I personally think, to kind of maintain greatness at a high, high level. Football's up there. It's probably harder to actually when you look at the attrition rate among NFL players. But just thinking about the daily tax that you have to pay every single day training in the gym, for Holloway to have done that and to have had success, he really has an unlimited ceiling. But this is like the ultimate check for Holloway's upside, is like he's facing a guy who I think is going to be too tough of a challenger. But what we've seen is Holloway maintained that consistency. And Jose, on his end, he's just, by and large, other than one single fight, has grabbed that ring of greatness. And he hasn't really given it away. He's only lost one time in the UFC. And what we have is just two guys who have done just a nice job of consistently being like the best fighters on the planet.
You know, and this is a fight card that obviously it's up to the MMA fans whether they want to sit there and purchase this fight card for $60. To me, and we talked about this on the recap podcast that we did for last week's UFC event, that this is a fight card that, you know, to me, the main event is definitely what is drawing me in. But I kind of feel as I've really delved into this fight card, I have a feeling that, you know, this is not going to be a pay-per-view that's going to draw a massive amount of buys for the UFC. But I do kind of feel like when we do the post-fight show on Sunday, we're going to be talking about, we were very entertained by this fight card because I believe the first three fights on this main card will all end in stoppages. I think there's a very good likelihood that those first three fights on the pay-per-view could end in the first round. Then when we get to the main event, co-main event, I think most likely we're going to see a 15-minute fight and then a 25-minute fight. But I kind of feel like this is a fight card that at the end of the day, on Sunday, we're going to go, you know what, there may not have been a lot of people who ordered this pay-per-view, but if you did, you were entertained.
Yeah, first and foremost, the UFC needs to thank the gods that the NBA is a big fan of spacing out their games, because had the NBA Finals Game 2 been on a Saturday night, there may have been 50 people purchasing this pay-per-view. I mean, the NBA is sucking up so much oxygen, but thankfully that game's on Sunday. I think this would do, like, not very good on pay-per-view, for sure. It just does not seem like this one has any buzz whatsoever. And I think the people excited for it are those that are aware of what's about to take place. But there isn't a big-time, I think, awareness of this event and of Aldo and Holloway currently. So, unfortunately, you're right. I don't think the business will be great. There's some anxiety that comes with that as a mixed martial arts fan. You have a fight that is so good with Aldo and Holloway, and nobody really cares. So that does trouble me quite a bit. But I do think you're right. It's a common trope. Like, we always see these cards that on paper look flat from a marketing standpoint, don't really generate much, and then the storyline after is like, it was just a phenomenal card. It does seem like there's like this weird inverse. It comes down to the way I look at life, in that the key to success is to never have expectations. And for this card, the expectations are pretty low. So the likelihood is that this will surpass our expectations and be a great card. And you're right, though. Looking at the first three fights on the main card, if I told you between those three, those fights are going to last combined 10 minutes, would you take the over or under?
Oof. Well, if Vitor Nate Marquardt ends in the first round, that's under 3 minutes. Okay, so now we got 7 minutes between two fights. Ooh, I might take the under.
I wouldn't, but it would be close. It would be a really fun bet if you're a degenerate gambler. If, obviously, Silva Medeiros and Paulo and Bam Ghosh ends in the first round, that would be like so similar to the way people bet a lot of other sports, where it's like you're betting the over under on total runs scored. I feel like the prop bet has to be there, because I think it's incredibly likely looking at those three fights, because these fighters either have a history of being finished in the first round or doing the finishing in the first round. And for Vitor, he happens to fill both those quotas. So, again, I think the main card's great. Honestly, the prelims, to me, just really suck, though, if I'm being completely honest with you. It was hard for me to get excited for a lot of these prelim fights.
Yeah, I mean, outside of a Sun Cao Moraes, what gets you excited with the prelims?
Well, there's a couple, like, hipster picks that I have for sure, but it's like you're really talking yourself into it. At some point, it's like you're manufacturing this fictional place, but here's my hipster under-the-radar pick for a fight that could steal the show. And it almost surely will not, because I guarantee you the fight of the night is going to be the main event. But a hipster pick for a fight to look out for, to me, is on the Fight Pass card. And it's not the two bouts featuring the undefeated prospects, but it's Jim Wallhead and Luan Chagas at welterweight. And The reason why I'm super excited about this fight is not that I think Walhead or Chagas is like going to be a great fighter in the long run and like being a top 10 guy at 170. I just think this fight could just be phenomenal because June Walhead, I would assume, is really frustrated from his last UFC fight against Yessen Ayari. Walhead has been a part of some really interesting bouts. He has at times given up maybe a better game plan to be aggressive. And I would assume after the letdown of his like big break in the UFC, he's just going to come out gung-ho. And Chagas, in his couple fights against Eric Silva and the one before Sergio Moraes in the first round, was just like awesome. So, Jason, if you want to be a hipster, bust out your laptop and watch the Fight Pass prelims, I would go with the welterweight bout to be one that would be kind of blowing your expectations out of the water. Am I crazy?
No, you definitely are not crazy. You know, it's in terms of, you know, I would say I'm interested in Brian Kelleher making his UFC debut against Yuri Alcantara. I do want to get into that fight a little bit later, but, you know, one of the things we always like to do on the pre-fight podcast is talk about our top five fights. And no question, I don't think there's a debate on one, two, or three. Clearly, we all know Aldo Holloway is number one. I think number two and number three, I think either it's going to be a Sunsal Moraes or Gedalia and Kovacevic. You know, some personally for me, I have a Sunsal Moraes number two, but I could definitely see where people would have Gedalia and Kovacevic number two, which I actually think that Gedalia and Kovacevic is probably the fight that's probably the most under the radar heading into this event.
Well, it is the co-main event, but I do think people reading a lot of content heading into this, it is a bit of an afterthought. And I think it's going to be interesting. I feel Claudia, to me, deserves to be a heavy favorite. Looking at that women's strawweight division, it's like the Joanna Jędrzejczyk is in her own tier. And then I almost feel like Claudia Gadelha has a real opportunity, and I'm sure she's excited about it, to be a part of the, you know, the Joseph Benavidez tier at women's strawweight, where she is in her own category, and she should be favored against every other strawweight not named Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So as good as she is, Karolina Kovacevic to me is a very game fighter, very active, and it seems like at times she can fight up to whoever her opponent is. Is it like, why do you think this one's going under the radar?
I just think that it's just one of these fights that just fans, I just don't think, have really gravitated towards. I will tell you, when I looked at the odds for this fight on bestfightodds.com, I was surprised. I was surprised how big of a favorite Claudia Gadelha was. She opened up at nearly a 4-1 favorite, minus 380, currently as we're recording this podcast on Friday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. East Coast time. She is minus 330. I mean, to me, when I look at underdogs in this fight card, that if I was, you know, in Las Vegas and I'm going to put some money down on because I'm looking for, you know, someone that is an underdog and could cash, Karolina Kovacevic is someone that I would look towards at plus 270. I mean, there are some other underdogs on this fight card that I definitely look at. I look at Brian Kelleher at plus 255. I also I look at Bambuse at plus 235 as potentially someone to go in there. And even Nate Marquardt at plus 140, I think, are some underdogs that I think have a good chance to walk away as winners at UFC 212.
Yeah, I could see those for sure. The Marquardt-Belfort fight is definitely a pick'em, in that if someone is real confident about what's going to take place, they're lying to you, just because there is a very, very, very real thing in that the chins of both guys are missing. The underdog that I kind of like, and he's not really an underdog, right? Because according to Best Fight Odds, he's like at plus 140. But at first, when this fight was booked, and I was super gung-ho about Marlon Moraes, I thought that he was going to go out there and look amazing against Rafael Sunsal. I loved his entire run. I couldn't wait for him to come to the UFC. But the more and more I've looked at this bout, the more and more I've thought about picking Rafael Sunsal here. I mean, one point is you do the Wikipedia test, and the last time Marlon Moraes has beat a guy with the Wikipedia profile is 2013. I think his most impressive victory thus far in his career may be over either one of the Josh Hill wins, or maybe against Tyson Nam. Unfortunately for Marlon, as great as he has looked, the level of competition just hasn't been there. And whenever you identify that aspect, there is always a part of me that wants to gravitate towards the opponent who has faced a high-level competition, gotten wins over Aljamain Sterling. It's been a while now, but TJ Dillashaw. So that's why I'm kind of biting the Asuncao there, is I feel as though he does a really, really good job, if you look back at the Pedro Munhoz fight, of spoiling the awesome prospects making their way to the UFC. And I think he's going to do that against Marlon Moraes. Yeah, as long as he doesn't like get into a firefight with Moraes.
Here's a question I have with that fight. And both Moraes and Asuncao have kind of mentioned this. And when I first heard Asuncao kind of say it, I was like, I heard Moraes say it. I was like, that kind of makes sense just because of where he's at. Because of what is going on with Cody Garbrandt, TJ Dillashaw, we'll see how all that unfolds. Is TJ going to fight for the flyweight title? Dana White was on the UFC Unfiltered podcast, and he made it sound like Cody Garbrandt is going to be out for some time due to this back injury. I mean, we know this is the year of interim titles in the UFC, but is the winner of this fight, are they fighting for a title shot?
The winner of this fight, you're saying, will get a title shot, or they will be
Will they get a title shot with a win here? And maybe it's an interim, whether it's an interim title or it's against Garbrandt, you know, because obviously if TJ goes out and fights Demetrius Johnson, you start looking at time range and you kind of look at the bantamweight division. If one of these guys goes out there and has a tremendous performance, I don't think it's a crazy thought to say this is a number one contender fight.
I think this is real similar to like the winner gets put in Jimmy Manoa position. I don't think they're the next contender, but they're the contender after the next one. Because honestly, looking at the time frame, I mean, how long is the expectation for Garbrandt to be out, Jason?
No one's talking.
No one's talking, which is a bad thing. And the great Bleacher Report article on Cody Garbrandt, I can't believe I can't think of the writer's name, but he did just a phenomenal job talking about Garbrandt. And I believe it was against Dominic Cruz when he won the title that he was like significantly injured in that one. It just seems like he deals with the injury. So with that being said, I think he deserves just a lot of long layoffs. So if I had to bet money on who he defends his title against, I think the next time Cody Garbrandt defends his title, it's going to be against the winner of Demetrius Johnson, TJ Dillashaw, whoever wins that fight. I could see that actually being the challenger. But the fighter in Asuncao Moraes who is in the best position to jump over Dillashaw, to me, is more than likely Marlon Moraes. I just think he has the opportunity coming in as a unique new face. If he runs through Rafael Asuncao, there will be a lot of buzz surrounding him, I think. So I do think Marlon is in a better position, despite the fact that Rafael Asuncao has never fought Cody Garbrandt. I just think it just doesn't seem like he has a lot of juice as a contender, if that makes any sense.
The thing with Moraes is we're going to find out, is he truly a top five fighter? You know, there's a lot of people around him who believe he's a top five fighter. But as you mentioned, the resume, the abilities you see in him make you believe he's a top five fighter. But the resume right now hasn't proven he's a top five fighter. I think it would not surprise me if Moraes wins this fight, if all of a sudden, you know, and timing is everything. Maybe he gets the winner. If Jimmy Rivera gets past Thomas Almeida later this year, maybe that's ultimately, you know, a number one type contender fight. But, you know, it all depends on what happens with Cody Garbrandt. But to me, that's my number two fight. But number one, everyone knows it is Jose Aldo and Max Holloway. And, you know, I don't know if you happen to see one of the topics we wanted to talk about with Jose Aldo is kind of the perception of him in terms of the casual sports fan and then also the hardcore MMA fan, because I think there's a big difference between those two. But Joe Rogan had a comment on his podcast recently where he said this: Aldo's legacy and his reign is always going to be tarnished by that 13 seconds against McGregor's. Because you take away that fight, and he's got one brutal war with Chad Mendez where he got rocked and stunned, which is a tough fight. Those are like the only hard moments he's had inside the octagon. Really, other than maybe round five against Ricardo Lamas. Remember, Lamas had him down and was doing a little bit of ground and pound in the fifth round, but that was like Aldo was too drained making that weight, end of quote. And of course, this was something that was asked to Max Holloway this week, and he kind of pulled the line of, no, his image is not tarnished, but I think in terms of the way the casual sports fan, their perception of Jose Aldo, their perception of him is getting knocked out in 13 seconds by Conor McGregor, where the hardcore MMA fan views Jose Aldo as one of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters in the world.
Yeah, yeah, that Joe Rogan thing, at first it's like I kind of see his point, and then like it's like, oh, man, did he do edibles? Because like at some point it kind of trails off, and I don't, like, there isn't like this constant string of logic I can find there, but I get what he's saying at first, in that the legacy is worse than it would have been had he beat Conor, clearly, but the legacy is still intact in that he is, I would say, without a doubt, the best featherweight of all time. Despite that one loss, you can't just throw away everything he's put together, and not only throw that away, but understand the reality of that was literally just one single punch, and then he returned and then kind of outboxed Frankie Edgar through five rounds. So using your brain, you got to say his legacy is there, but you are right. Logic does not affect perception all the time, unfortunately. It goes all the way back to, you know, Socrates. So I think it's hard for us to equivocally say what all casual fans are thinking, but Jason, to simply say it, if you say Jose Aldo to a casual fan, the first thing they think of will be the Conor loss. That is something I believe is true. So I think his legacy is still there, man. It's just that you're right. When the spotlight was at its highest, he had his most embarrassing moment. And I do think he's got to do everything he can, I think, to get that rematch with Conor.
I agree.
Because when Conor's in the cage, everyone's watching. And that kind of opportunity would allow him to just kind of almost eradicate that embarrassing moment. I think that's the one thing he would have to do for people to no longer think of the time he got knocked out, is to actually knock out McGregor. But let's not lose sight of the fact that he's the best 145-pounder of all time.
I mean, I firmly expect if Jose Aldo wins on Saturday night that he will cut some kind of promo to try to convince Conor McGregor to come fight him. But, you know, one of the things, and, you know, last time we saw Jose Aldo was 11 months ago at UFC 200. It's been that long since he got that win over Frankie Edgar. And, you know, the craziest thing about that fight, and a lot of it is due to the fact of, you know, having that concern about the takedowns, was he didn't throw a leg kick till the third round in that fight.
Yeah, I was noticing that on a rewatch, where it was just all boxing, and it was like they were doing a rhythmic dance, and Aldo was the one conducting the exercise. He appeared to be the fighter who was just one step ahead, and it did seem like that was almost like an immediate reaction to his previous fight, where he did value the defense more and the patience more. He allowed the fight to come to him and not so much force the deal and get knocked out. So I think him not throwing leg kicks is a reaction to that. I would expect plenty of leg kicks in this fight. In fact, I'm so stoked for this fight against Max Holloway. I think when you think of Aldo, his best fight ever is probably the Chad Mendes bout, his most recent one. You could throw in maybe the Edgar fight. And then the other time he won five in that AC is against Mark Hominick, although I wouldn't put that one in the same category. I think this bout against Max Holloway, thinking about how their styles will clash, like, could actually be the best fight Jose Aldo will ever compete in. I think this could honestly be a fight of the year contender, just because Max Holloway, kind of unlike Edgar, is just a lot more aggressive and a lot more high volume. So this could literally just be the best fight Aldo's ever competed in.
And this is a fight that I think we believe will be play out on the feet, but the fact of Max Holloway is only 25 years old. This is a fighter who is still developing. So who knows? Maybe he does try to mix in a takedown at some point. As I was putting together the stats for this fight card, one of the stats that kind of really jumped out to me, Max Holloway has the most knockdowns in UFC featherweight division history with 7. Jose Aldo has the 5th most with just 3.
That's surprising to me.
When I saw it was only 3, I guess my perception was I just felt like it, and maybe it's because maybe we're thinking of Jose Aldo in the WEC too, so these stats are only in the UFC, but I just felt like Aldo's only got 3.
That is astonishing. I mean, he has fought, I want to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 times in the UFC, which, so the two counters, what I would say is he's only fought 8 times, Jason. He spent a lot of time off, so 3 out of 8. But here's the actual important counter is when we think of Jose Aldo, violent striker, guy you don't want to mess with, guy that will knock you out with a flying knee. He did that a lot in the WEC, and the reason why he was able to do that in the WEC is because he was fighting lesser competition, which is kind of what Holloway's been able to do in his UFC run. Whereas for Aldo, the second his UFC run started, he was defending the UFC featherweight championship. Literally every single fight that Aldo has been in has been a UFC featherweight championship fight. So I think it's harder for a fighter like Jose Aldo to put together those statistics when he's literally required to face the best guy in the division every time out, you know?
And these are, you know, when it comes to overall history in UFC featherweight division history, they have the 3rd and 4th most total fight time. Holloway, number 3. Jose Aldo, number 4. Cub Swanson, number 1.
Wow. Cub, man. Yeah. And he may get his opportunity to go 25 minutes against the winner, too.
I think it's, you know, and timing's everything in terms of what happens here, but I do kind of feel that Cub will get the winner here.
Yeah, I mean, Connor, as much as we talk about him, look, he's too busy boxing, and when he comes back, I think we both would agree that he won't fight at 45 again. Am I crazy in saying that? Like, I think for Aldo to ever fight McGregor again, it's going to have to be at 155.
Yeah, I don't see Conor returning to 145. I think if, you know, either one of these guys are going to fight and have a rematch against Conor, it's going to be at 155. I mean, I think we do kind of forget, because it was so long ago, that Max Holloway fought Conor McGregor to a 3-round decision.
Yeah, that was a fight that really put Holloway in a bad position, because he had, I think at that point, lost 2 in a row, and we didn't realize that Conor was the next big thing. Like, Conor really stood out in Cage Warriors, very similar to the way Michael Page stood out in his pre-Bellator run, in terms of just like being an exquisite talent. But we didn't know McGregor was that good. And then after that fight, I would not have expected Holloway to piece together 10 consecutive wins. I mean, looking at his UFC career, yeah, you got to always remember, as you mentioned in the beginning, like, this is a 25-year-old who I believe has fought in the UFC 16 times, which is just astonishing. It's not only been the quantity of fights, but it's been a habit of Holloway to just fight often every single year.
One of the interesting questions that we got here for this podcast on Twitter came from at WWE Big Show Fan 6, where he asked us if we could talk about the crowd reaction if Holloway stops Aldo. Stun silence or riot? I would lean, I guess, and maybe this is more of hoping than anything else, hoping that it's a stun silence and not a riot.
Yeah, a riot would be not good. First and foremost, I love the Twitter handle, WWE Big Show Fan. I can't believe one out of all the wrestlers, Big Show is the one you gravitated towards. But hey, each to his own. I think stunned silence is the more likely outcome. I did some research. I saw this question, Jason, and this is unscientific. What I did was I went to the UFC events page, and then I put in the location, and I just scanned through every Brazil card, and I may have gotten it wrong, but I think there have been 29 UFC cards in Brazil. So, or 28, excuse me. So of the 28 cards, I looked at every main event, And before I give you some of the details, here's my favorite detail I got. There were 28 cards, 27 of which had a Brazilian in the main event. One did not. The main event was an American versus American, Frank Shamrock versus John Lober at UFC Brazil. Now, this fight card, Jason, this is the interesting point, happened in 1998. You know who else was on that 1998 card?
I'm guessing Vitor Belfort.
You know who his opponent was?
Who was it?
He's a Bellator headliner this month. Vanderlei Silva versus Vitor Belfort fought on that card in 1998. Jason, that was like 21 years ago, right? Or 19 years ago, excuse me. Just astonishing. Anyways, back to the statistics. Of the 27 other fights, one of them was Brazilian versus Brazilian, a heavyweight fight between Big Nog and Verdum. 15 of the 27 times a Brazilian won. So quite often a Brazilian has lost in the main event, nearly half. Now, the two times a title fight has taken place, an American has won or a non-Brazilian has won, there were two different reactions. The first reaction, which was just the crowd going crazy, was Ronda Rousey finishing Betch Correa. And in that one, the crowd went crazy, as one would expect. I think that has to do with the fact that no one in Brazil knows who Correa is. Now, the other fight, the crowd did go quiet, and it was the one that I think we both remember, Miocic, when he knocked out Fabricio Werdum. The crowd, to me, was very quiet. So, to answer that question, I would expect a quiet nature because I think two things come into play. One, the way Brazil thinks about their champion. They didn't really so much care about Correa. I think they really care about Jose Aldo. And then two, if the opponent is a superstar. Ronda Rousey was a superstar. Max Holloway isn't. So I would expect a very quiet crowd if Holloway gets a finish.
I don't see the finish coming here. I am picking Max Holloway. I think he gets a decision victory here. And this is kind of, I think, the theme throughout this fight card for me. I'm not exactly confident in my selections for this fight card. I mean, I think this is a fight card that is very good matchmaking by the UFC. I think there's, quote-unquote, a lot of pick'em fights, but I think that this fight plays out for 25 minutes, and I think that Holloway will – I think it's going to be a very close decision. I've got him winning 48-47. Do I dare say split decision?
I think you should. I think we're due for some controversy in this main event, and we'll stick with the theme of us disagreeing, man. I got Aldo here, and like you, I feel awful about it. And there is something beautiful about a championship fight where the favorite is like -140, and the underdog is like +120. That's when you know you got something special. I think we got something special here. I just, again, there are major concerns. It's hard to maintain dominance at an age. It's hard to do so when at times it appears for Aldo there are distractions. Constantly think about McGregor getting up there in age, having time in between fights. That's a big time concern, but I still believe when these two strike, and I think the only time we'll see wrestling is if one guy is rocked. I think Aldo's going to have a better approach to landing strikes accurately and defending them. What really concerns me, and the reason why I think Holloway can steal rounds and steal this fight, or win this fight, excuse me, is his volume, man. He throws so many strikes that it's going to be very difficult for Aldo to avoid all those strikes and do enough of his own damage to actually win rounds, but I think he's going to do just that.
And speaking of those strikes that he throws per minute, he actually has the 10th best strikes landed per minute, 5.67 in UFC history. And this is, by the way, minimum 5 UFC fights. I don't know if you could be able to guess who's number one.
Has to be a heavyweight, right?
No, it is a female.
Oh, so it obviously isn't Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I'm going to go with Jessica Andrade.
Joanne Calderwood.
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's when you look at strikes land per minute, the top three are female fighters.
Was it standing strikes?
It's just strikes land per minute.
So who are the top three?
Joanna's number two at 6.87. Joanne has 6.92. Number three, Leslie Smith at 6.81. Then it's Cain Velasquez, Thomas Almeida, Jessica Andrade, Conor McGregor, Evan Dunham, Max Holloway, and Todd Duffy.
So, okay, this is a very interesting question that we will not be able to answer. I wonder what the difference is in total strike attempts in women's strawweight fights compared to every other division. It must be absurd, right? These female fighters must have a fight at a faster pace or throw more strikes than any other division, including flyweight. I would, somebody needs to do the research. Not me, but that's interesting. I would not have anticipated. I would have gone with the heavyweight because I would have said it was like a Todd Duffy type that just knocked guys out in 10 seconds or an Alexander Shlemenko type that knocks guys out in 25 seconds with a body kick.
Now, the co-main event of this fight card, Claudia Gadelha against Carolina Kovacevic, a big matchup in 115-pound division. Talked a little earlier about, for me, this is my number three fight, but if it's your number two, I no argument there. But to me, a very under-the-radar fight here. It was interesting to hear Gadelha talk this week, the fact of she doesn't, basically is not wanting a title matchup in her next fight. Carolina, very different. She believes that with the win here that she should leapfrog Rose Namajunas and she should get Joanna next. And, breaking down this fight, I think it's pretty easy for me is can Carolina stop the wrestling of Gadelha? And if she can, but I ultimately see that Claudia gets this fight to the ground first and second round, and then she starts to wear down the third round. Carolina takes the third round. She wins 29-28.
I could see that. I think Carolina definitely has the ability to peak late in fights, whereas Claudia, not so much. And that's a beautiful story that I could see take place, Jason. I see three rounds for Claudia Gadelha. I think she's very aware of her conditioning, I would assume. She appears to be, looking at the UFC embedded, I feel good about it. I feel good about her training camp, but more just looking at her fights. I think a couple things. Claudia, to me, has a real chance to outstrike Carolina Kovacevic, and not a great chance because I actually think it's going to be a standstill. And again, if Claudia takes it to the ground, I think Carolina kind of has the defense to not really get threatened too often. So I feel confident about Claudia winning this fight, largely due to the fact that I actually favor her in every aspect of the fight game. But the reason why this fight is compelling, and like you, it's my number three, is that even if Claudia has an edge in so many of these different areas, other than maybe conditioning, the edge at times is very slim, and I think the slimmest edge is in the stand-up. I may have miscalculated that, and Carolina could come out here and outstrike Claudia, but I actually think we're going to see Claudia Gadelha look phenomenal here. And obviously, in terms of title challengers, Rose is the next one. There is just no one, I think, is calling for a Carolina rematch. And Claudia, again, has fought Joanna twice, and she's – in all likelihood, going to get a third fight because I just think she's a real special talent and she'll find her way there. But there's nothing wrong with taking a longer path to get back there for the third time.
I would hope that whoever wins this fight, the UFC gets behind because I just think there's, I think Kovacevic has kind of been the star of the embedded series this week. And, Gadelha, she's got an interesting story. The fact that she has left Brazil, she has moved her training to New Mexico full time. She switches in between two camps there in Albuquerque, one of those being Jackson Wink. I would just hope that, the UFC would start to get behind one of these ladies and start to tell their story a little bit. Now, of course, we mentioned our top three fights. Number four, number five, pick them out of a hat because I don't think there's a number four, a clear number four, and number five. I think the first three fights on the pay-per-view have a high probability of ending quickly. Vitor Belfort, Nate Marquardt. Apparently, Vitor did not read his contract very well earlier this year when he thought he only had one fight left on his deal. Actually, he still has another fight left on his deal. And Vitor, can we please stop the UFC Legends division? No, I do not want to see you against Chuck Liddell. Can we just stop that, please?
Speak for yourself, Jason. That's a fight I've been dreaming about.
Bellator 230.
That's going to happen. I hope you know that. That will happen, and then maybe winner gets a title fight against Royce Gracie. I don't have that in my top five, but I think that's largely due to just being tired of watching these guys fight time and again. It'll probably be an entertaining fight in the moment. It will be special. The lead up and the post up will probably be depressing, to be honest. So I think Vitor is going to win that bout, though, Jason. It's been a very long time since he's gotten his hand raised in the cage. I think it's going to be very similar to kind of the run when he doesn't fight like top seven guys in the division. I think that allows Vitor to have success. And there were moments, I thought, in the Gastelum fight where he did look okay. So I think Vitor gets the stand-up finish. But, I mean, if Marquardt's smart, maybe he just comes out here, attempts some haymakers, or maybe just uses some type of wrestling to take it down and not get tapped out. But I think Belfort gets a first-round highlight reel knockout, Jason. Let's do this thing one more time.
For Nate Marquardt, you just got to survive the first 3 minutes.
I disagree. I think he needs to go crazy. I know it's a bad idea, but I want it to happen because that could be epic. But yeah, for his point of view, going crazy is a bad idea because that is Vitor's game. We've seen it how many times, Jason? This dude blitzes fools, and he's getting slower, but it's still lethal.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about I don't feel confident either one of them. I am picking Vitor Belfort, and I think primarily it's probably more of believing in Vitor's chin more than I believe in Nate Marquardt's chin. I don't know how good of a statement that is to throw out there because I think there's a lot of questions in both guys' chins here. But I think if you're Nate Marquardt, you just try to get this fight to the ground. Don't have a standing striking matchup with Vitor Belfort, even though that's what I think it will be. But, you know, it's clear when you watch Vitor Belfort fight, he's got 3 minutes to win the fight. And if he doesn't win those first 3 minutes, if the clock hits, you know, 2 minutes to go in the first round, this fight's still going, just switch the entire favor to Nate Marquardt. Because if it hits that markup, Nate Marquardt will win this fight. If it doesn't hit that mark, Vitor Belfort's winning. I'm picking Vitor, but man, I'm not confident at all.
I think you've hit it on the head, man. I agree with everything you just said. If there were live fight odds, it would shift dramatically. Vitor's my pick, and like the main event, I feel worse about this one than the main event because these two guys, Vitor and Marquardt, are your stereotypical make-you-feel-stupid fighters where you pick them and you feel stupid when they get knocked out in the first round. But I at the end of the day, either we both won't feel stupid or we'll feel stupid together. So congratulations to Nate Marquardt on the victory. We just jinxed Vitor. Like, there's no way Vitor's winning now if we both pick him, but I think it's going to happen. And yeah. Who's he going to fight next after this, Jason? You think he'll get a title shot? Because I think he certainly deserves it, right?
You can't put Vitor against anyone in the top five. Because I think he just absolutely gets destroyed.
I disagree. I think Bisping and Vitor is the fight to make. I think for Michael Bisping, like that's his go-to fight, right? Like, you got to look at the division.
Okay, outside of Michael Bisping, tell me who Vitor beats in the top 10. Romero, Rockhold, Whitaker, Musasi, Jacare, Weidman.
Well, all those guys are
Anderson, Brunson, Jocko, Branch.
Okay. Maybe no. David Branch would fight a smart fight against Vitor. Yeah, I think he loses to all those fights. But you got it. You're missing the point.
I would do Vitor Derek Brunson. Because I think Derek Brunson would get it, would just sit there and you know, to quote Julian Lane, he would let him bang, bro.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only other one I would look at is maybe Vitor versus Sam Alvey. I think Sam Alvey would cut some great promos, and I think that fight would be awesome. So the recipe is the same. I think Belfort's next fight needs to be against an 8-15 type guy, and it's a guy who, to quote Rampage, and you quote Rampage often, but to throw some bungalows. That's what we need to get out of Vitor's next fight. Although, like, that would be really bad, actually, because he's been through so many wars. Like, he actually probably should retire. But if he's going to fight again, you know, it's all about putting on one more great show, right?
What's the better MMA cliche, Rampage cliche or Julian Lane?
Well, throwing some bungalows is less likely to, like, get you porn results, so I'll go with that one. Like, let's bang, bro. That's just like a quote in every other porno. So I'll go with the Rampage one. Am I wrong here? Do you disagree?
Do you no, bang? I don't disagree. By the way, I just decided to Google "Let Me Bang, Bro." It is all Julian Lane.
Okay, "Let Me Bang, Bro." Yeah, but if you click on the videos tab, you get something way more interesting, Jason. No, I'm kidding. It's all Julian Lane. Who the fact that he hasn't parlayed this into a career in pornography is beyond me. But it could be lucrative. It could be lucrative.
There's even a definition for "Let Me Bang, Bro" in Urban Dictionary.
What's it say?
Oh, it's nothing bad. The term used to describe a fight in which participants stand up and exchange standing strikes. It's commonly used in MMA to describe an aggressive stand-up contest.
I found it. "Let Me Bang, Bro." The last time people watched The Ultimate Fighter, this was said. That's what I found. I found that, actually. Are you watching The Ultimate Fighter? No, you're not. Liar. No.
It's on my TV because on Wednesday nights I record the Valor Hour, and so it's on mute. So I see, you know, what's going on. I see the fights, but it just doesn't interest me.
Who do you think is going to be in the finale?
I'm trying to think who's won this season.
I think Joe Stevenson just lost, but they put him back
in. Yeah, they put him back in. I mean, I've always felt James Krause is the favorite to win that thing. But it's interesting when you look at the fight card for the Ultimate Fighter finale. It's very clear that not many of those guys are getting a fight on the finale.
It's already full, right? Like
I think there's only either one or two fights of guys that are going to be from that season.
And that's because those are like, well, I wouldn't be surprised if they use one or two of those guys on the Tuesday night show that they're doing.
It wouldn't surprise me if the final is Jesse Taylor versus James Krause.
Yeah, Jesse Taylor is the guy who stuck out to me as a fighter that was just going to win fights. Like, he has great wrestling. That would make a lot of sense. I haven't seen any episodes before the finale. I'll actually probably go and binge watch it. It'll be one of the least enjoyable binge watches I'll do in my life. But I always kind of like watching every episode of The Ultimate Fighter back to back to back to back. But yeah. I mean,
I can basically tell you this season is just basically it's a Team Alpha Male soap opera. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. But back to UFC 212, middleweights, Paulo Borrachinha, who I think I pronounced that correctly, taking on Owolowe Bambuse. I think this fight's, I don't see him making it out of the first round. But it was interesting this week, I don't know if you saw this, that Bambuse coming to Reebok's defense. That's exactly kind of a take you don't hear in MMA too often.
What do you say?
He's just basically defending them, thanking them for what they're doing for the sport. I'm like, man, you're really pushing for that Reebok sponsorship hard.
Yeah, that's like LaMelo Ball pushing out a big baller brand. He's done a nice job. It's almost like this company has raised.
Did you see the video LaVar Ball put out there about issuing a challenge to Ice Cube where he takes a shot that is clearly a loud brick?
I have not seen that.
That's, oh, you got to find it. It's hilarious.
That's when I'm kind of pissed because I've been mispronouncing Bambosi's name this whole time. And I want to give him some credit because he is fun to watch fight. Like, he isn't.
Oh, yeah.
He isn't like a high-level prospect at 185, clearly. But this dude comes in and he doesn't care, man. He goes out and he has enjoyable fights. It is very green at times. And his opponent, Paulo, is kind of similar too. Like, this is another fight that could steal the show. Again, I think Aldo Holloway is just the odds-on favorite. It's, similar to Kenny Omega versus Okada. But I think Paulo Olowel Bambuse could be, like, one of those first-round finishes that goes back and forth. Although, if I'm being honest with you, I don't think it's going to go back and forth. I do actually have Paulo in this bout, and I think he's going to win convincingly in dominant fashion.
Are you trying not to say his nickname?
I'm trying not to say Borrachinha. Because, yeah, Borrachinha and Bambuse after I've been saying Bam Ghosh or whatever.
Poor John Anik.
Yeah, poor John Anik. I don't envy some of these commentators, although I do think the one name that has just, God, every time somebody says it, it's different. It's Kovalkiewicz. I say Kovalkiewicz. I don't know if that's right or not.
But that's what I'm going with.
I feel like a lot of people go with the W there, Kovalkiewicz or something. Kovalkiewicz.
Or I think what's it? Kowalkiewicz. I'm trying to think the other way I've heard it said.
And don't underestimate Carolina. You can go Carolina. I'm pretty sure it's Carolina.
Yeah, it's Carolina. Yeah.
It is Carolina. Sometimes I've gotten lazy, but a lot of times, like, you just revert. You forget that this specific name is said in a specific way with this specific person. And I'm sure that specific person is like, hey, I'm a person. So
yeah, it's tough. But, you know, Paulo had a tremendous UFC debut back in March, winning in 77 seconds against Garrett McQuinn. He's never made it out of the opening round. He's been referred to as basically the new Vitor Belfort. I do like him to win here. I don't think it makes it out of the first round. I think this will be a fun, entertaining, what I call a kickboxing matchup inside a MMA cage. And then the opening matchup on the pay-per-view, Eric Silva versus Yancy Medeiros. And Eric Silva's kind of like Vitor Belfort and Nate Marquardt. I never know what Eric Silva's going to show up. So he's always a tough guy to predict whether you think he's going to win or not.
He's a real renaissance man. I tell you what, it's time to alert the authorities. I think we've arrived at our crossroads, Jason. I'm going Eric Silva, not to win, but he's on a crossroads. This is must win for Eric Silva, because I could have sworn he was in a really tough spot, in a position after getting knocked out by Nordin Talib. He comes out, returns to form, showcases his ground game, which I think he, like, that wasn't a part of my thought process with Eric Silva's fighting, despite the fact that, like, a lot of his wins are by submission. It seemed like at times he's kind of getting sucked into some stand-up bouts. So he has a much better ground game than I expected, but I think he's at a crossroads because he's facing a beatable opponent in Yancy Medeiros. But if he loses, and there's a real possibility that he does, and there's a real possibility that if he does lose, it's because due to a knockout, that could really set Silva back. And it just seems like the story of his UFC run, literally the last like 5 years, has been trying to live up to like his UFC debut, because he came into the UFC and looked awesome, getting like a first round finish. And then since then, he's just traded back and forth losses and wins.
I mean, think about this. Since he came in the UFC back in 2011, the wins, Luis Ramos, Charlie Brenneman, Jason High, Takanori Soto, Mike Roach, Josh Koscheck, and Luan Chagas, of course, fights on this card. Outside of Chagas, none of those guys are in the UFC.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you could make the case that Jason High should be in the UFC, although he lost his last World Series of Fighting bout. But yeah, you're right. All those guys have not been in the UFC. I don't know, man. I'm going Medeiros. I don't feel good about it either, but I really like his stand-up. I mean, Silva, to me, could like really easily win this contest, utilizing wrestling and more importantly, utilizing grappling skills. So I have Medeiros. Who do you have in this one?
I like Medeiros as well. I just think that, you know, he'll use his striking. And, you know, you have to mention Medeiros, you know, not making that massive cut to 155 pounds. He talked about that this week. The fact that when he was at 155, he was, you know, pretty much cutting 35 pounds. Now fighting a natural weight class where he's happy at, and I'm definitely going to go with him there. We talked about Moraes and Sunsao a little earlier. I'm going Marlon Moraes, but are you going Rafael Sunsao?
Yeah, no, I could feel dumb about it, but I'm going to Sunsao. Again, Moraes looks epic at times. He's one of those fighters that he fights, and you just get excited about the unlimited potential of a stand-up. I think there will be some patience out of a Sunsao, a lot of points scoring. I think he wins 2 out of 3 rounds, and like Pedro Munhoz, he spoils Moraes' UFC debut.
So we're through the final 6 fights of the fight card. We have only disagreed on 2 fights so far.
I think let's get some disagreement going on, Jason. Who do you have in Antonio Carlos and Eric Spicely?
I'm going Carlos Jr. I think his frame will, and I believe the strength advantage he's going to have in this fight will keep the fight on the feet, and he will not get into a jiu-jitsu fight with Eric Spicely, and I like Carlos Jr. to win.
Let's embrace debate. I disagree. I got Eric Spicely, And I'm not disagreeing for the sake of disagreeing. I actually wrote him down on my piece of paper here as one of my underdog picks at like plus 195. Now, this could go very badly for Eric Spicely if this is a stand-up contest, because he is like not into the stand-up game at all. But he surprised me in his last two fights, getting quick submission wins. And then Antonio Carlos Jr., the reason why I'm picking against him is I'm just kind of pissed at him because when he entered the UFC, like I was like, oh, God, this guy's like super amazing. He's got unlimited potential, and he's at times let me down. So I'm going with Eric Spicely, which almost certainly guarantees a win for you here.
Yeah, so look, if the fight's on the feet, I think it's clearly Carlos Jr., but if Spicely can make this jiu-jitsu fight, he definitely has a good shot there. The other two fights, part of the FS1 prelims, are both bantamweight matchups, so it should be noted, three of the four matchups on the televised prelims on FS1 are bantamweight matchups. You got Johnny Eduardo against Matthew Lopez and Yuri Alcantara against Brian Kelleher, and you look at Johnny Eduardo since coming into the UFC in 2011, which, I mean, think about that. He's been in the UFC nearly 6 years. He's only had five fights.
And he's 52 years old. He is really good. He's just a guy that he lives in the shadows of the UFC. You always forget about him. But he's incredibly talented. And I guess the wake-up call had to have been when he fought Eddie Wineland.
But I mean, you look at his two losses in the UFC, they're against top contenders, Rafael Sun Sal and Aljamain Sterling. I mean, it's crazy to think of the fact that he hasn't had many fights in the UFC, but I'm going to go Matthew Lopez here. You know, this is a guy that 8-1 in his career. He is coming off that win against Mitch Gagnon. He's mentioned that he does want to try to get back and get a rematch against Hani Yahya. But I'm going to go here. I'm going to go with the younger guy.
Yeah, I could see that. But again, we disagree. I got Eduardo. I worry about the age, as I always do for fighters over the age of like 33. He's 36. And the reason why I like Eduardo is I just think he's more skilled. I think he has more experience. I think he's going to fight a smarter bout. I think you may see some aggressiveness out of Lopez, but certainly a good pick by you, because, I mean, Matthew Lopez looked awesome against Gagnon. He had one moment where he didn't look as awesome. Mitch put him in a rough position. But by and large, Lopez is on the up and up, and I just think against Eduardo, he's going to lose.
It should be noted, Daniel and I don't go over our picks before we start recording, so neither one of us know who we're picking at all.
Let me pick the next fight, because I feel like I'm reacting to your picks, but I swear to you, these are my picks prior. So next fight, Alcantara, Brian Kelleher. I don't have a good pulse in this bout, so I'm just go with the proven commodity. And a lot of this is a reaction to the very last card we just had against UFC Fight Night. I went very heavy on guys who were less proven commodities, more unknowns versus the veterans, and I looked awful here. So I'm going with the veteran here in Alcantara. I think fighting in Brazil is a big deal here. And then more importantly, he looks really good when he's not facing like top seven guys in the division in Faber and Jimmy Rivera. So I like Alcantara.
I'm going to go Brian Kelleher, making his UFC debut here. Took this fight on short notice, was actually signed with ACB. ACB let him out of his contract to go in here. He's won six in a row. Most notable victory in those six fights would be against Andre Sukumthaw, which if you want to see a awesome tweet, just go to Andre Sukumthaw's Twitter profile and you see that, which if Brian Kelleher wins this, win or lose, I think they should book Brian Kelleher versus Andre Sukumthaw next, but I'm going to go with the young guy. I'm going to do my old father time catching up with Yuri Alcantara here, but yeah, Yuri's one of those guys that you know, people don't necessarily think as one of, you know, top 10 bantamweights maybe necessarily, but I'm going with Brian Kelleher here. Then, of course, you have three fights on the UFC Fight Pass prelims. You've got a women's matchup, a welterweight matchup, and also a men's flyweight matchup. You mentioned about the Chongis-Wallhead fight. You're going Wallhead in that one, right?
Yeah, I'm going Wallhead. It's one of the favorites. I mean, underdogs, I really liked at plus 215. I just I think his – at times when he showcases his best possible self, I think that's a big time advantage against Leon Chagas, but The big concern is Wallhead will fight tentative and almost be his own worst enemy mentally. So that could take place, but I'm going to go with Wallhead to react to his UFC loss with the win over his opponent.
Is it bad that you pick against Marco Beltran just because he was on Ultimate Fighter Latin America, and for the most part, those guys just haven't fared well in the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, that's the case for basically every non-American Ultimate Fighter show, unfortunately. But he's been okay in the UFC, man. He's moving down to 125, and I am picking against him. But it's more to do about his opponent, who has really done a nice job of putting together a very nice resume heading into the UFC, and Davison Figueroa. We have to learn how to say his name correctly, but Figueredo or something like that.
Alcantara.
It's Davison Alcantara?
Figueroa, I think that's how you say it, but it's all Alcantara is actually his last name, I believe.
Oh, that's way easier.
It's one of those, you know, Brazilian where the nickname is the quote unquote last name.
Yeah. Well, that's like kind of true, but not like that. I think that's only true with athletes, because I know a lot of like normal Brazilian people. By a lot, I mean four or five, and I don't know. I feel like they usually do like the middle name more than anything, but yeah. Anyways, whatever. I'm getting sidetracked. I think he's gonna win. What is Viviana's last name? Is it not Pereira? Is it Silva? Is it something different?
Do you know? I think it's Pereira. Yeah.
Oh, so sexism here in Brazil naming process. Look, I think she's gonna win too, man.
I do.
But also, she looked pretty rough against Valerie Letourneau. It wasn't like the dynamite performance you would have expected of an undefeated strawweight.
Yeah, but, looking at it, we pretty much, we're a little across the board here, but recapping my picks, I'm going Max Holloway, Claudio Gadelha, Vitor Belfort, Paulo Porochina, Yancy Medeiros, Mara Moraes, Antonio Carlos Jr., Matthew Lopez, Brian Kelleher, Viviana Pereira, Luan Chongas, and Devison Alcantara. I'm not even going to try to say his other name.
Yeah, smart one. I like you, Devison Alcantara. I got Jim Wallhead and Viviana Pereira. I got Yuri Alcantara, Johnny Eduardo, Eric Spicely, Rafael Sunsao, Yancy Medeiros, Paulo Borrachina, Vitor Belfort, Claudia Gadelha, and Jose Aldo. And then my fight of the night, Jason, shocker, I think it's going to be the main of the event. And I think the performance of the nights are going to be Paulo Borrachina and Vitor Belfort.
I agree with those performance picks. Let's end the podcast on this. Which underdog has the best chance to win?
Which underdog has the best chance to win? I'll go with Max Holloway at plus 125, Jason.
Wow, you're going out on a limb there.
I've been beating the Jim Wallhead drum this entire show. And I'll stick with that. I got him at plus 215. What underdog sticks out to you, man?
I think it's going to be Rafael Sunsao. Even though I'm going the other way, if I'm looking at you tell me I got to put money on one underdog that I feel confident that I think could come in and win, I'd probably look at Rafael Sunsao.
Not to be a backseat driver here, Jason, but why aren't you beating the drum of Brian Kelly here, who you did pick and who's like a much heavier underdog?
That would be easy. I could take that, but I would feel more confident in a Sunsao win than I would a Kelher win.
I see. So you're starting.
I like money. Okay.
Yeah, I do too.
And I like money.
If you want free money, there's a certain boxing bout that I'll let you in on. I think you could get some free money.
They're actually. So I guess you're not talking about the Bruce Boyington boxing matchup that's happened in New England fights.
That's a thing that's happening.
Oh yeah, that's a thing that's happening. Yeah, he's doing a 6-round boxing matchup at the next NEF card.
Well, you know what I just saw right now, which I was not aware this fight was taking place this weekend. You feel more confident in Vitaly Minnikov beating Antonio Silva or Nikitai Krylov at minus 1200 against his opponent Stepan Bekovic? Which of those two? And Tony Johnson's on this card. This could be one of the best fight cards of all time. Fight Night 68. You guys got to tune in this one. I'm actually going to watch the highlights. But
it's on UFC Fight Pass. I'm planning on tuning that one in there. Obviously very interested in Vitaly Minnikov, who's a 6-1 favorite. Oof.
Yeah, against Bigfoot Silva, which is just speaks a lot to talent level of Minnikov and speaks a lot to how Bigfoot Silva like shouldn't actually be fighting. But I think Minnikoff will treat him nicely. Like, I don't know if he'll get like a knockout win or maybe a TKO victory.
Yeah, man. There's not many people who are signing up to watch Tony Johnson fight.
Yeah, yeah. We know a couple people, but unlikely that that fight will be great. Yeah, that's probably the highlight of the non-UFC weekend because we already had the Shlemenko-Brandon Halsey fight. So, yeah,
man,
looking
back. 25 seconds. Jesus.
Yeah, man. I would assume he broke something. Like, it was just one kick to Halsey's body that and he just fell down.
As I'm watching that fight live, I'm sitting there going, is this ref going to stop the fight? Because yeah. Halsey is just turtled up on the ground, and Shlemenko is just raining down punches. I'm like, dude, stop the fight.
Yeah, yeah. That was a bad one. Because Brandon Halsey basically just told the referee that I'm done with this fight.
And the only reason the fight was stopped because Halsey tapped.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. No, it was literally one single strike. Halsey goes down. Shlemenko celebrates, comes back, and he just punches him. Awfulness on an M1 challenge. Although, man, they do a great job of production there. Like, they offer – it's all free. You just download the app, and they got American commentators oh, my gosh, I'm missing his name.
Sean Wheelock. Yeah, yeah. Here's the funny thing. I forgot about Wheelock calling that event over there. I texted him yesterday. I'm like, hey, man, wanted to ask him about something, and then it was after he was like, oh, I'm in Rush. I go, yeah, I kind of forgot that when I sent you the text.
Yeah, talk about money, man. That's awesome. That's awesome that the M1 has the money to, like, do an American broadcast in Russia. You know, a lot of times, like, these things are outsourced. But that's good. That's good stuff. I don't know where the money's coming from. I'm not asking any questions. I'm just excited that you kind of have that product available.
Yeah, so obviously there's always a ton of mixed martial arts going on. Of course, on Sunday, Daniel and I will record a post-fight podcast. We'll talk about what happened at UFC 212. Of course, be sure to give both of us a follow on Twitter, @Jason_Floyd. On Daniel's at Daniel Galvan DGG. You might see some snarky comment about Tom Savage throwing pick six.
Wow, that's messed up, Jason. That's not a snarky comment. That's a victim trying to let the world know how stupid it is that Tom Savage is our number one quarterback.
Yes, and of course, be sure to like the MMA Report on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMMAReport. Of course, you can always hear this podcast on RadioInfluence.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Actually, it's now Apple Podcasts. That's how iTunes wants it called, Apple Podcasts. So be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. So that's going to wrap it up for the pre-fight show. We'll be back on Sunday for the post-fight show for UFC 212.
This is the Crush Report with Jeff Crushell.
How are the big food and soda companies accessing our children to promote their products? And is it time to rebrand exercise to get away from the concept that it's an effective weight loss tool? We spoke with Dr. Yoni Friedhoff.
The problem is when we look at population-based studies, both in adults and kids, and truly around the globe, this idea of exercise as a preventative or a treatment for obesity has been incredibly disappointing. People don't seem to, despite huge amounts of exercise, get any handle on their weight unless they also simultaneously change their diet. And so for Coca-Cola, getting involved in causes that promote a message that's Coke-friendly, which is exercise and you can have Coke, and also getting involved with causes that are beyond reproach. It's hard to wrap your head around knocking a company that's giving, for instance, dollars or charity, however you want to describe it, to youth sport. But, you know, I think it's important for people to remember this isn't charity. This is marketing. If it was charity, they'd be giving checks with no strings attached. Ultimately, we end up serving as unwitting marketers for all sorts of folks who probably shouldn't have access to ourselves or our kids. But that's just the world that we've created over the course of the past 50 years.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Crushell, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.